We're going to get started. Yeah.
So friends, this is our last afternoon together, and every afternoon we've been exploring some aspect of chivalry, beginning with the legacy of Abraham, and then examining the classical Sufi teachings on chivalry, especially those of Sheikh Abul Hasan Kharaghani. And yesterday we delved into the life and heroism of Pirzadi Shahida Noor. And this brings us to the question of what form exists for chivalry today, for you and I. And so I would like to tell you about the chivalric activity of the Enaiatia, which is a channel for this mystical, ethical work that we call Futuwa. As you know, the Enaiati order consists of a number of activities. Five were very clearly established in Murshid's lifetime. Those five being the esoteric school, universal worship, which we'll celebrate this evening, kinship, healing, and zarat. But just before Murshid left for India, when he blessed the cornerstone, on Hijrat Day, September 13th, he blessed a circle, a certain number of close disciples who were ready for it as knights of purity and as heralds. And then he left, returned to India, and from there returned to the invisible. So he left behind these designations of herald and knight of purity, and he also left behind the iron rules, copper rules, silver rules, and golden rules. But the knighthood was not yet formulated. It just had these elements, these chivalric initiations and these rules. And then for decades, it was dormant until the centennial, when my uncle Sheikh Al-Masheikh Mahmud Khan, who had undergone a chivalric training at the hand of his father, who was Murshid's brother, he and I had the inspiration to finally revive this activity and make it available. And so we did. And the form that it takes is that the 40 rules are the substance of the path. And one works with these rules day by day. So the first rule, for 40 days. You say it every morning, you remember it all through the day, you put it into practice, and then you go on to the next rule. The 10 iron rules, and then 10 copper rules, 10 silver rules, 10 golden rules. So 40 days for each of 40 rules, which means years of practice, daily practice. Now, you might say, well, rules, I'm not looking for more rules in my life. I'm looking to be free, not to take on a lot of regulations. But as much as these are rules, they're contemplations. And of course, there's no compulsion to take on this practice. It's only if one reads and studies these rules, if one feels, yes, this is a picture of what I already feel, what I know to be true, but too often I've found myself distracted, far from my ideal, I become caught up in reactions and patterns that are seemingly beyond my control, but I want to take control now of my life and live according to my truest values. If one has that feeling, if one forms that intention, then this course of practice and study is extremely powerful, because it means every day you take up a principle and strive to live it. And the rules also, on the face of them, they might seem very self-evident. For instance, a rule that where one asks of oneself to be honest, to make no false claims. But then by the practice of it, we keep inquiring, well, what does honesty really mean? What is false? What is true? It's not so clear cut. And the living with that contemplation day after day for 40 days, focus on one principle, delve into the depths of it, inhabit it deeply, and then go on to the next one. It's a transformative regimen. Moshe left the code in these rules. So if one takes it up, if one makes this decision, then the way to enter is you become an iron herald. And what that means is that you resolve now to begin on the iron rules. You recite one each day and live it. At the end of the day, look back and review how it has lived in your day. And you're an iron herald for those 40 days of 10 rules, for those 400 days. Then another 400 days for the copper rules and the silver rules and the golden rules. So it amounts to 4.5 years. And interestingly, that is precisely the length of time during which Parsifal was wandering in search of the Grail. He had a glimpse of the Grail. The Grail was shown to him. He was dazzled by it, but he didn't ask the right question. What ails thee, uncle? And the Grail was withdrawn, the castle disappeared. He spent 4.5 years in search of the Grail. 4.5 years of iron rules and copper rules and silver rules and golden rules. And in the end, it's a long story, a wonderful story. He had a rapprochement with a brother he never knew he had, who was of another religion. The two brothers, hitherto unknown to each other, reconciled. Came into the fold of the Abrahamic lineage that enfolds the chivalries of Christendom, Judaism, and Islam. And the Grail, and not only did he receive a vision of the Grail, in the end he became the keeper of the Grail. And all of this is symbolic of this path of ethical transformation. And that's what one undertakes in this. And another example is the example of the knights of the Round Table, who at Pentecost every year would affirm their vows and then ride out in different directions with the intention of being of service and not knowing how they would serve, but knowing that they had their vows, they went out into the world to be of service. That's the chivalric intention. It's not in a certain time at a certain place, but wherever you are, walking down the street, or in an airplane, or at home, or in hard times, in good times, in always to be in that state of not only readiness to serve, actually eagerness to serve, but not over eagerness, because there's a rule about that too. So I'd like to read out all 40 rules, but then I would like to invite three knights, those who have gone through the training over the last, over 4.5 years, and receive the accolade, and have a little dialogue about some of the rules. And then we all have the very wonderful privilege of witnessing the accolade of two heralds, golden heralds, who are now ready to receive the accolade of Knight of Purity. So let me just, first of all, read out all 40 rules. Iron rules. My conscientious self, make no false claims. Speak not against others in their absence. Do not take advantage of a person's ignorance. Do not boast of your good deeds. Do not claim that which belongs to another. Do not reproach others, making them firm in their faults. Do not spare yourself in the work which you must accomplish. Render your services faithfully to all who require them. Seek not profit by putting someone in straits. Harm no one for your own benefit. The copper rules. My conscientious self, consider your responsibility sacred. Be polite to all. Do nothing which will make your conscience feel guilty. Extend your help willingly to those in need. Do not look down upon the one who looks up to you. Judge not another by your own law. Bear no malice against your worst enemy. Influence no one to do wrong. Be prejudiced against no one. Prove trustworthy in all your dealings. Silver rules. My conscientious self, consider duty as sacred as religion. Use tact on all occasions. Place people rightly in your estimation. Be no more to anyone than you are expected to be. Have regard for the feelings of every soul. Do not challenge anyone who is not your equal. Do not make a show of your generosity. Do not ask a favor of those who will not grant it you. Meet your shortcomings with a sword of self-respect. Let not your spirit be humbled in adversity. And the golden rules. My conscientious self, keep to your principles in prosperity as well as in adversity. Be firm in faith through life's tests and trials. Guard the secrets of friends as your most sacred trust. Observe constancy in love. Break not your word of honor, whatever may befall. Meet the world with smiles in all conditions of life. When you possess something, think of the one who does not possess it. Uphold your honor at any cost. Hold your ideal high in all circumstances. Do not neglect those who depend upon you.
Thank you, Alia.
Melin, you are a knight of chivalry, having gone through the 4.5 years of daily practice and work on these rules. And I want to ask you, is there a certain rule that is at the forefront of your mind at this moment that you might wish to say a few words about how it was to practice it, what were the challenges, what were the openings?
Thank you, Bawa, for this opportunity to speak with you about this, and thank you to you and your uncle for the brilliant idea of bringing this forward again to us. The rule that I would like to speak with you about is the second iron rule, speak not against others in their absence. I was raised in a family where I was told, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. And I abided by that when I was young, or made an effort to anyway. And as I got older, what I began to realize is that I was raised in a misogynist family, and a misogynist religion, and a misogynist culture. And my silence, in a way, I was being complicit with individuals and systems that were very destructive to me. I was abused. I was harmed in many ways by the misogyny that I grew up in. And quite honestly, Bawa, speaking against it is what saved me. If I hadn't been able to name it and speak against the individuals and the system that was so harmful, I was a doormat. And I had no strength and no sense of myself. And today, when Fatima spoke about the anger and rage that she feels, I could relate to that. And I feel grateful, in a way, that I found that strength in myself to speak against it and against the individuals. So when I started practicing that iron rule, it was very challenging for me. And we kind of touched on this afternoon in the morning session when we did our little exercise and sat in the chairs. When we fight against something, we can make it stronger. So when is speaking against something, or an individual who is abusive or harmful, when is that actually helpful, and when is that sort of igniting the fire of the injustice that is going on? So that was part of my struggle with that rule.
Well, what did you come to?
when I was very young, I had no voice. I was raised in a culture where I was not encouraged to speak. And so I think when I feel What I came to is understanding the power dynamics that go on, that if I were to confront someone, I think what I try to do is go directly to a person if I have an issue with them. But sometimes there are power situations that would actually make it perhaps dangerous or harmful to me or to other people if I were to speak directly to that person. And so that's where I am challenged by it. You know, I think as I've gotten older and I've healed, partly thanks to the healing order, from some of those injustices and abuses, and have come into my own voice and my own confidence, I have more strength that I can speak directly to people now where I could not so much before. But when there's a real power abuse going on, I don't know. You know, when someone, if they speak up, they could actually be harmed by what they're saying if they go directly to a person in power. And I don't think I've figured out what to do about that.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned that misogyny was a prevalent blight on the world around you as you grew up, and you said you felt the necessity of speaking out against it. You use that word it. So it, the phenomenon of abusive treatment of women, that would seem not to fall under the purview of speak not against others. It's an it, it's a phenomenon, it's not a person. Not a person, but it's a kind of behavior and an attitude. But what this rule calls our attention to is persons themselves. But what then if there's a case of a person who is very much caught up in that kind of pattern of behavior, is perpetrating that kind of behavior and causing harm thereby, well, is it possible to speak out against the behavior but not against the person, in the sense of there's a soul there, and that soul is more than that behavior, and that soul could grow beyond that behavior. Perhaps that soul at one time wasn't acting in that way. So the soul isn't the behavior. Is it possible to address it at the level of a phenomenon, a behavior, rather than a person?
Mm-hmm. I think that is kind of easier to do in a way.
Yeah.
I think when it's an individual, and I think, and sometimes what I needed to do is speak against the abuser to other, particularly other women, who could help me get perspective, and affirm that, yeah, you didn't imagine that just actually did happen, or these kinds of things do happen to women. You know, it's not your fault. That those kinds of conversations were helpful, and so I was was deliberately speaking against it because I didn't have the strength or courage or the freedom to direct them.
But again,
directly.
You said it, and that it.
Okay,
is,
so the person.
If, yeah.
So I couldn't speak directly to the person.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I didn't have the
that's right.
The
you
strength
spoke to
or courage.
Others about the it, the behavior of that person.
Yeah.
Which doesn't seem to violate the.
Well,
the rule.
I got pretty upset and probably nasty at times in my process in all the years of that I was so damaged and hurt by it. That I'm sure, I know I said things that were less than kind about the abusers.
Well, the rules are always an aspiration. The rules are a direction. The rules remind us that we're in the midst of a messy situation, and if there's harm and there's a need for, the rules also balance each other. You know, there's a rule which would commend to us the protection of those who are in harm's way.
Right.
And observing that rule might be confronting the harm. But this particular rule that you've mentioned has to do with not speaking against others. It has to do with othering, otherness, othering and otherness. When you speak about someone, can you actually invoke their soul? Like, speak of them as if you know and do know that you're speaking of a soul that has taken on a body and a mind that has taken on patterns of behavior, and those are patterns that you want to challenge. But rather than exiling that person from the sphere of spiritual connectedness, of
right.
unity, of I-ness, to speak of them not as an other, but as someone that would be, that is in the room spiritually when you speak about that person.
You know, I think a real breakthrough for me was when I realized if I had been born a male into that family and that religion and that system, guess what I would have done? Same stuff as was done to me. And when I was in healing, that was a real big aha for me. And I think something that has really helped me too is a few years ago you introduced the concept of Hosniazan. I witness it in our order, the habit of speaking against each other, which is so destructive. You know, we're all volunteers, we're all working really hard, we're all holding up some piece of it. And we have a habit of undermining each other, people who do really give their hearts and their good work, and it's very disturbing. So when you offered Hosnizan to us as sort of a counter to that, that has also been a real help for me in living this rule.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for bringing up this fine point, really, because it's important to understand these rules are part of a complex world, and the living out of the rule always involves balancing multiple considerations. Like, on the one hand, respecting the dignity of every person, and at the same time, when a person isn't respecting the dignity of others and is harming them, some intervention may well be needed. But how to handle it deftly and without unnecessary the recrimination that goes to the essence of the person, or a dismissal that goes to the essence of the person, go to the behavior, go to the system, the problem, and keep holding in one's heart the sanctity of each soul.
Yeah, the sacredness of the person.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
Could you say a few words about Hosnizan?
Yeah. Hosnizan. Yeah, that it means good thought, beauty of thought. And it means that, giving people the benefit of the doubt, really. It's the opposite of cynicism. You know, it's the opposite of a kind of cynical, bitter view on life. It's a hopeful view on life. And the ability to, when someone says something, to try to see, really look for what they meant, and in the best possible light, and rather than to assume the worst. And so in a conversation, like, you know, maybe part of what someone is telling you, it's hard to make sense of, it's confused, but you hear something in there that really that has meaning, and then you just respond to that. Yes, there's something we can build upon. You look for common ground in relationships and conversation. Try to affirm each other, build each other up, work from what you can find consensus in, and in that way be hopeful, be positive, and not, you know, caviling and argumentative. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Bawa.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, sorry. I thought it was you next. Here we go.
Oh, okay. Oh, this helps. Yes. Thank you for having me here. And I want to let you know right now how blessed I feel, both by this gathering and just your presence in general. And also this path that I'm on. We both originally picked the second iron rule. My reasons were a little different. It was more had to do with gossip and just sort of that sense of superiority. But this speaks to that very well. I'm going to do silver rule 5. My conscientious self, have regard for the feelings of every soul. And, you know, I mean, if that was just every soul was just animals, that would be great. You know, I mean, who doesn't love a dog and a cat? I have a problem with cockroaches in my house. But, sadly, that extends, you know, to all of mankind. And just today, you know, and the topic came up during the Sobet was, you know, those dark souls in this world, you know, and I'm supposed to have regard for their feelings. I'm glad you did commentary, by the way, on this, and I'm just going to read. And yet, if one reads the rule closely, it does not say subordinate yourself to the feelings of every soul. The rule doesn't require us to change our mind or submit to anyone's wishes. And to me, that's really important. And one of the big questions that I've had to ask myself in life, part of it's because I come from addiction, and, you know, I've been in recovery from addiction. Would I rather be right, or would I rather be happy? And that's a no-brainer. I'd rather be right, you know. But you know, the reality is that I'm not happy when I'm right a lot. And that just that ego thing of just wanting to, you know, it's almost like, and this really has come up for me here a lot in what has been going on, particularly in, with Guyon, that there's a part of me that likes the sense of victimhood and likes anger, because then in that space, my mind immediately jumps to a place where I have permission not to have regard for the other person. They've done something so heinous that, you know, like I'm the judge. Mm-hmm. They've done something so heinous that I can just disregard them, you know, take away their humanity. And, you know, so I think I could change that to would I rather be right or would I rather love someone?
Yeah.
And, you know, God is in charge. I mean, God is in charge of everything, you know, and I go back just like, you know, one of the gospel lines I like is, you know, about the sun shining and the rain falling on the so-called good and bad, you know, and I'm certainly not qualified. There are certain things that, like you said, about behaviors and moral issues in general. There's a lot of stuff that, you know, with regard to the environment is a big one, racism, misogyny, these things, I don't have to like them. But if I disregard or dehumanize anyone because of their feelings about that, I am immediately locking them in a prison, which is another one of the iron rules, I believe number 6. I'm locking them into a prison, you know, that I'm not creating a space for them to, you know, to find God. So, anyway.
Beautifully said. Thank you so much. Thank you.
That's it?
You've said it all.
All right, thank you.
Well, thank you for this moment. And I don't want to break the rules while discussing the rules, but I'm really struggling with which one to pick here because all of these really... so many of these really shattered me, working through them and just trying to figure out, and I'll make an admission. When I first started out, I really wasn't clear on the 40-day alignment, so I actually did all 10 rules for the first 40 days, and I was like, why is this not so effective? And then I went back and talked to Surawardi, and he says, oh, you're doing too many at one time, you gotta slow down, so, okay, so, back on track. But two in particular really struck me today, and as I'm sitting here listening to the other rules, it's really just kind of tying together why I'm so stuck on both. So the one that I initially was going to share was be no more to anyone than you are expected to be. And I think that comes up for me a lot of reasons, but mostly because I'm here as an emergent leader, someone who's really just... I've been bitten by this bug, and I'm just so... I just want to serve so much. And in that longing, in that wanting, sometimes the ego can step in and kind of make you expect to be more of yourself than people expect for you to be. So I know for me, you know, initially coming to my guide, Tasneem, it wasn't very long into, you know, maybe a half a dozen classes or so, and I'm like, yeah, I want to be a teacher, so what do I got to do, you know? And, you know, and similarly with Davey, when I wanted to be a healing conductor, there was some time that passed between the initial trainings that, you know, my request for trainings and when the actual trainings happened, and I'm grateful for that because we expect ourselves to be so much more to people than we really are. And I think for me, you know, this has a lot of layers to it. It's kind of like the onion rule for me because it has all these layers you can peel back. You know, in high school, I think I was always in relationships with people that had a need that needed to be filled because I wanted to be a healer. I wanted to be a nurturer. I wanted to be there for someone to lift them up, you know. But at the time, I had all this ego, too, and I wanted to lift them up to my level. But what was my level, you know? And I, you know, step into this new emergent leader role or aspiration, I just feel it's important to remember that, because we can easily project onto someone what they expect of us or what they need from us. And it's easy to think we know, but it's a lot harder to just listen and experience that and take that in and reflect that back and be that mirror. So that was that one for me. I think that's why that really came up, because I'm very much like a Sheikh Sufi. I'm a little wild, a little crazy. I got the yelly voice and all that, but I have this adab that I don't want to overstep something. I don't want to do something wrong. You know, I came to this path with all these hang-ups and, you know, dreadlocks and tattoos, and am I going to fit in? And boy, do I fit in. And alhamdulillah, thank you. Yeah, so I think it's easy to, you know, kind of see yourself way over here or way over here when you just need to be present and in that space. So this rule really meant a lot. And the other one I struggled with not sharing, or that I'm going to share, when you possess something, think of the one who does not possess it. And I think these two tie together in that way, because you see somebody coming to you with a need, and they're coming to you because their perception is that you have what they need. But you don't. You just are the vehicle, the channel, to help them find what they need. You know, and I think about the discussions that we've had recently about racism and things, and coming to the Astana for the first emergent leaders, I wasn't really familiar with historical trauma. I knew the word, but it was a word, it was an idea to me, and it really wasn't something that I'd experienced enough to really know. I have Native American roots, and so, you know, some Cherokee and Choctaw, so I can relate a little bit to some of those atrocities. But walking down to that riverbed there, down the street from the Astana, where the slave ships came in and landed, you can't deny that feeling and that energy. And I had an experience, and a few of you from Emergent Leaders might remember this story, but I had an experience. It was almost our last day, and I walked down to CVS to get batteries or something for the sound system that we needed, and I saw a gentleman outside, a man of color, standing in front of a building, fairly well-dressed, and he was sweeping the walkway, and it was like 6:45 in the morning. We're all dripping in sweat because it's really hot and humid at that time. And I just stopped and I talked to him for a minute. I said, "Man, you're working too hard. You got to slow down here." And he goes, "Oh, no, this, you know, I live on this step here. I sleep here. And this man that owns this building, he said that I can stay here as long as I keep it clean, as long as I pick up after myself." But pardon my language, but I'm just going to quote him. He said, "But I'm really pissed off this morning because those assholes over there at that bar came over here and pissed all over my step." And he goes, "And all I want to do is find enough money to go get some bleach so I can clean it up and keep my word to this man." And that really, really broke me. And I walked down to, and I said, "I think I can help you out." So I walked to CVS, and I came back, and I gave him a few things, and cleaning supplies was one of them. But on the way back, I thought, so here I am, a white man. I possess something this man doesn't possess, a privilege in that people perceive that we have. And I'll be damned if I'm going to go back there and hand him cleaning supplies and a sponge and say, "Here you go." You know? So I went back and I gave him what I had in my mind. I gave him my white privilege. "Here, you stand here and watch me work, because not today." And I appreciate that Fatima and Onaje and so many others have brought this to our attention, because obviously the first session, it was kind of energy draining. It was a lot. It came up a lot, and it was just kind of like, where are we going with this? I see it emerging into this. And Season of the Rose, I've heard, you know, equality come up so many times, and some of us possess this equilibrium with others that other people don't have. And I just really want to be aware of that and be more conscious of that, because I possessed something this man didn't have, and I didn't understand what he had because I didn't have it. But then it made me realize what I have that he doesn't. So my double story there.
All right. Well, it's time now. Okay.
Well, actually, it would be very nice to be closer together. Yeah, why don't we all just come close together? Yeah, just come here. Toward the One, the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being, united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit of Guidance.
My conscientious self, make no false claims. Speak not against others in their absence. Do not take advantage of another's perseverance. Do not boast of your good deeds. Do not claim that which belongs to another. Do not reproach others, making them firm in their faults. Do not spare yourself in work which you must accomplish. Render your services faithfully to all who require them. Seek not profit by putting someone in straits. Harm no one for your own benefit.
Copper
rules. My conscientious self, consider your responsibility sacred. Be polite to all. Do nothing which makes your conscience feel guilty. Extend your help willingly to those in need. Do not look down upon those who looked up to you. Judge not another by your own law. Bear no malice against your worst enemy. Influence no one to do wrong. Be prejudiced against no one. Prove trustworthy in all your dealings.
Silver rules.
My conscientious self, consider duty as sacred as religion. Use tact on all occasions. Place people rightly in your estimation. Be no more to anyone than you are expected to be. Have regard for the feelings of every soul. Do not challenge anyone who is not your equal. Do not make a show of your generosity. Do not ask a favor of those who will not grant it to you. Meet your shortcomings with a sword of self-respect. Let your spirit be humbled in adversity. Golden rules. My conscientious self, keep your principles in prosperity as well as in adversity. Be firm in faith through life's tests and trials. Guard the secrets of friends as your most sacred trust. Observe constancy in love. Break not your word of honor, whatever may befall. Meet the world with smiles in all conditions of life. When you possess something, think of the one who does not possess it. Uphold your honor at any cost. Hold your ideal high in all circumstances. Do not neglect those who depend upon you.
We need two glasses.
Okay, two glasses. Here's one. Is it still?
It should be empty. Not yet. Stand. Will you uphold the iron and copper and silver and gold and rules with all of your heart for all of your days and do all in your power to serve God and humanity? Rise, night of purity. God bless you. Will you uphold the iron, copper, silver, and golden rules with all of your heart for all of your days, and do all in your power to serve God and humanity?
I will.
Rise, night of purity. Those who can kneel, we kneel. Those who cannot, simply stand. Ya Fata, 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 Ya Fata. If there is anyone here who intends now to enter the chivalric path, let that be known. If there's one who intends now to take up the iron rules. On this day, you become iron herald. May your work be blessed. Yafata. We close with the prayer. Someone. Iron Herald, may your work be blessed.
I didn't know anyone could do this.
Anyone?
Oh, you don't have to like prearrange?
No.
Oh. Yeah.
Iron Herald, may your work be blessed. 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 Okay, now come in more and more. Yeah. O thou who art the maker, molder, and builder of the universe, build with thine own hands the universal, our temple, for thy divine message of love, harmony, and beauty. Amen.